Hey, thanks for listening to the Church on the Ridge podcast. This is David Wall. We're in the middle of our series, Healthy Holidays, which explores how we can be emotionally, spiritually, and relationally healthy this holiday season. Last week, Charlie talked about those triggers, those fuses that can get us to blow. Today, in part two of this message, Charlie talks about different kinds of difficult people and how you can avoid being one yourself. Take a listen.
Hey, welcome. Welcome, everyone, and thank you. It really is a privilege to be a part of Church on the Ridge. It's our it's just an honor for us to get to serve and make a difference in the lives of people and the lives of this community. I was so encouraged. I was at that new coffee shop in North Bend. I was meeting with a guy. You know the name of it? But you guys know the place. It's across from Ace Hardware. I was in there. I walked in with a guy, and Rock was there with like half the defense from the Mountainside team, and they were doing a Bible study. I'm so encouraged by that. I sit down with my meeting, and he leaves, and then like three other people from the church came into the doors. Like, man, this is going to be my new office. This is so cool. But what was really encouraging was this one person came in and says, Pastor. Man, I've been carrying these around in my purse. And she pulled out last Sunday's notes and said, man, it's just been so helpful being able to make sure that I'm saying the right stuff and not cutting the wrong wire. And so if you are ready this morning to go into the holiday season with health, no more explosions, man, stop the madness, the craziness, pull out your notes now. Get a hold of those things because they're going to help you this week. We started this series about 3 or 4 weeks ago, but we're on part two of diffuse before it blows, all right? Diffuse before it blows. And this idea of when you go into a holiday season, a party, a business, an important conversation, something they're called crucial conversations, and you know there's going to be somebody difficult. Yeah, how many difficult people in your life? Don't raise your hand because they may be sitting next to you. You got difficult people in your life, and you're figuring out, how do I address this? How do I keep this thing from blowing up? And they will say something, and remember the spy movies, right? The guy's coming to the end of the movie, and he finally breaks through the door, and there's the atomic bomb, and the ticker's going off. Kick, 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 kick. And he's got like 90 seconds to think, and he pulls out his MacGyver knife, and he pulls the hatch off, and he reaches in, and there's this big snarl of wires, and he finally gets it down to the red and the blue wire, and he's got to make a cut, and it's down to 4 seconds, and he's got a decision to make. We have these crucial conversations, these interactions. And that person lights the fuse, and you've got just a few moments. Am I going to cut the red wire or the blue wire? Is this going to save humanity, or is this going to ruin the holidays? You know, what's going to happen? Is there going to be carnage everywhere, or is this thing going to be able to go into it and say, hey, we had a nice Christmas. Boy, that was a good party. That was a neat get-together. I'm glad this happened. Difficult people in your life, they have a way of lighting your fuse, and a lot of times they have a very short fuse. You just got barely any time at all to make that decision. In team meeting this week, Dr. Dietrich was walking us through emotional intelligence, a lot of the stuff that we're teaching here, and he showed a slide about difficult people and some of the characteristics. I want to walk you through it. It might be there in your notes, but difficult people are difficult to engage, right? Just to have a conversation with, they're difficult to engage, and you know this person, man, just trying to talk to this person, it's weird, it's awkward, it's difficult. They're also difficult to speak with. You're not sure how to talk to them. You talk to other people, things go really well. You talk to this person, and it always seems to just not quite go right. They're difficult. They're difficult to understand. You recognize that they're actually speaking English, but you don't know what they're talking about. We're over here, and they're out here in the atmosphere someplace. You're like, man, I'm trying to understand you, but I don't know where you're going. Difficulty in following through. You think you left the meeting, and hi, Doug. God bless you, man. Good to see you. Wow. You leave the meeting, and you think you got it all figured out. Okay, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And they come back and you didn't do anything we talked about. And they'll have some reason for it, some excuse, some something, or something didn't happen. Like, okay. Also, man, I mentioned this already. They have a short fuse. They're easily offended. You know, you're just thinking you're just having a conversation. Yes, it may be difficult, and you got to address some things, but now they're just blown up, and things are just, come on, come on. When you have these crucial conversations, difficult people in your life, people with short fuses, man, the bombs just, the ticker just always seems to be going. You've got to make an assessment. Is this person, do they have a systemic problem in them, or do they simply have dysfunctional issues? Now, I want to just be honest with us. Every one of us in this room have dysfunctional issues. If you're breathing, you've got some level of dysfunction. Some of us in this room have systemic issues where it's permeated through us. It's in our psyche. When my wife had breast cancer, the doctor told us, look, it's good news. It's encapsulated. It hasn't busted out of whatever the term is for it. It hasn't busted out. So all we have to do is we have to take out all the mammary tissue, and then the cancer will not be able to spread because you won't have any more cancer tissue, the whole thing. So you guys get the mastectomy thing. If it had busted out and gone into the lymphatic system, it would be systemic. You will have this thing throughout your whole body. And then you're going to need chemo and radiation and a lot of treatments and years and this stuff. And we're going to trust that it doesn't take over. So a dysfunctional person, you and I, we have this thing that's in us, and it just takes, you know, some stuff, but it's not systemic. There are some people that you interact with, and man, it is just in them. It's going to take some major work. Some of us need some major work. Some of us need a little tweaks, and we go on. A systemic person, let me go through these with you, they have real control issues. It's always got to be their way. They got to control everything. They got to tell you how to make the turkey for Christmas. They got to tell you how to, the Christmas tree decorations have to go on. No, the tinsel's got to go on like this. Like, whoa, man, they just got to control everything. Micromanager type people. They're passive aggressive. A lot of times, they'll smile at you 1 minute and stab you in the back the next minute. You think you're best friends, and then all of a sudden they're yelling. Whoa, who am I? Get him. I'm a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. Sometimes a both person's coming out of the same. There's a lack of empathy. Right? Never seem to recognize how this is affecting you. Never see that, man, your emotions are in play as well, that you're a person as well, and they should have some sense of, hey, you know, I can tell this is hurting you in some way, and man, maybe I can back off a little, but there's just a lack of empathy. Hey, I'm just telling you the facts. Hey, I'm just speaking the truth. Hey, I'm just telling you like it is. All right? They're disruptive to the team and the family. Oh, okay, here they come. And you already know this thing's just going to be a deal, right? Because they're disruptive. The family get together. Oh, they're coming. You have people like that? Oh, they're coming? Oh, you know what's... They're either violent or vacant. Violent or indifferent. Right? It's like, man, we're having it! Or they go quiet. They just don't say anything. They're sitting in the corner, kind of moping over there. Just like, hey, do you want to come play a game with us? No, I'm fine. Okay, whatever. In their life, there's usually a lot of drama. Right, come in. Hey, how's your week going? Oh, you won't believe what happened to me. The dog was up on top of the fence, and he fell over, and he broke his leg, and I had to go in the middle of the night, had to take me down to the emergency ER, and it was like a $400 bill. And it's like, good grief, what's, you know, it's the drama of the week club, you know? And how in the world did your dog get up on the fence, and what were you thinking, right? But it's just all this kind of stuff. Oh, and everything's just a big deal. It's drama. That's somebody who's got a systemic issue in their life, and it's just, man, it just permeates the whole thing. It's just, okay, all right. Dysfunctional issues. There's some poor patterns or behaviors in our life. There's some things that, man, we've learned since we were little. We took on from our parents or something, and they're just kind of stuck with us. And it doesn't take a lot, but there's a pattern there, a habit there that should be broken. But once we break that, once that thing is dealt with, it's like, hey, you know, we're marginally better. Wow, that's not a big deal. Coachable. People who will allow someone to put their arm around them and say, hey, you know, you can do this. Get your arm. No. Thank you. Put your arm around me. Thank you. All right. Give me a little pep talk. What should I do? And they're coachable. They're receptive to instruction. Hey, you know, if you just turn this a little bit, if you just change, lower your voice. It's a tiny bit there. Hey, one of the things my wife told me was my facial expressions. When you get that look, and I'm like, I don't have a look. She goes, you got a look. When you get that look, it just sets the whole room. So I decided I got to be aware of this thing. I don't want this thing to just be permeate my entire being. I'm going to be aware of this. So just even the way I look. Why can't I just look the way I want to look? Well, because it affects people. Well, that's their problem. Systemic. Thank you. An issue. I want to get better. Do you want to get better? Or I don't need to get better. I'm not the one who's got the problem. What do I need to get better for? I get along with people just fine. It's you're the problem, right? The person just simply needs some boundaries. Hey, let's make it really clear here because I need you to follow through. We need to get this thing done. So here's where the parameters are going to be. With other people who don't have, you know, that dysfunction in life, you can tell them and they get it and they'll go down. You don't need to. But others of us, hey, let's make the boundaries really clear. Thankfully, in dealing with difficult people, whether they're systemic or dysfunctional, the Bible gives us some good helps. We started this last week and we started looking at, hey, what wire are we going to cut? We're in these meetings, we're in these parties, we're in these family gatherings. What wire are we going to cut? And a lot of times we just have a few seconds, just a short amount of time to make a decision to either turn this holiday into HE double hockey sticks or into something healthy, all right? And 1 Peter starts off, he says, finally, he's coming into his letter. He's writing it to the entire church. That's you and I. Universal, worldwide, throughout history, finally, all of you live in harmony with one another. Now, I like that. I want to live in harmony with my wife. I want to be, you know, when I'm 60 years old and the sun's going down, we're sitting on the porch in the rocking chair and I reach over and I grab her hand and she actually lets me hold it instead of get your hand off of me. It's been 60 years of... No, and she squeezes my hand, and we look, this has been a good life, huh? Yeah. The last thing I want is to be on my third or fourth and reach over, and go, which one are you again? I forgot your name. You know? Live in harmony with one another. When I'm 60 years old, it would really be cool if my grandkids came and visited me. So we want to go visit our nice grandpa. Live in harmony. So, we learned about being sympathetic. If you weren't here last week, you need to get the talk because they go together. We need to learn to be sympathetic. Cut the sympathetic wire. We need to love as brothers, brotherly love. Being compassionate. And this week, we're going to start off with this fourth one, humility. Humility. And man, if this one doesn't go against everything our world teaches us. Humility is that everything inside of me says, no, I want to be first. Man, I got to win. I got to achieve. And humility says, oh, okay, I'll just take the last crumb on the table. Oh, no, you go first. No, I can't really, you know, hey, you know, when somebody tells me, Pastor, I've been carrying my notes around, and man, thank you for encouraging me. I can't really say, oh, you know, I just got to go, well, it was just all Jesus, you know. Thank the Lord, don't thank me. Somehow the church has got this weird idea of what humility is. That somehow, if we're going to be humble, then we have to go into, you know, to the back of the garden and just eat worms all day and sit in the dirt and, you know, still. And that's never what God intended it. That's not humility. That's somehow, so we've got this bad idea what humility is. Let me help us out this morning. First of all, humility is seeing ourselves for who we really are. Having an honest appreciation. To be humble means to see myself for who I really am. 1 Corinthians 13, I know you're waiting for this slide. I'm sorry, brother. Love is not proud. Sorry, Matt. There it is. But let's go. What is humility? Being honest with who I really am. Who am I? How do I see myself? Pride says, you know what? I don't want you to see the real me, so I'm going to pretend to be somebody different. And it's always better than who I am, right? And so I'll tell you, I'll embellish my stories. I'll embellish my accomplishments. I'll make sure that you see who I want you to see because who I really am, I'm embarrassed of, ashamed of. I think that you won't see, you won't like me. That's pride. I got to be better than. Pride says I got to be liked by you and it's going to change who I am. And it really doesn't change who I am. It just changes who I pretend I am. And then I never really have a harmonious relationship because you're not having a relationship with me. You're having a relationship with the pride me, the fake me, the unreal me. And I can never let you show me the real me, so we can never really be close, never really be tight. We can never really be intimate and have a close relationship because I'm always putting on the face. And God says pride never allows for relationship, a harmonious relationship. Because if you, like me, you know what's going to happen one day, that pride mask is going to slip. And people are going to see behind the facade and go, woo, wow, why were you lying all these years? Why are you pretending all these years? Romans 12 puts it like this, because of the privilege and authority God has given me. Paul's writing, says, guys, I've been called by God. I have the authority, and it's a great privilege for me to speak into your life. He says this, but I'm going to give you a warning. I give each of you a warning. Do we have that slide? No, we do not. Oh, okay. I've been acting like it's been up there all week. He says this. Is it in their notes? Don't think. Here, let me read what he says then. Don't think you're better than you really are. Paul says, I'm going to give you a warning. Don't think you're better than you are. Be honest in your evaluation of yourselves. He's just saying, admit who you really are. Ask yourself, am I humble? Do I let people see the real me? Or am I a fake me? I got to be somebody else in order to be liked. That puts you in the category of a difficult person. The Bible teaches us that humility is essential for us to cut the right wires. Seeing myself for who I really am. I was going into a meeting this week, and I was meeting with the team before the meeting, and the three of us were going to go into this crucial conversation. It was a pastor buddy of mine and one of our board members, and we were kind of, you know, strategizing how we're going to approach the meeting. And I said this. I said to the team, I said, guys, I'm not going to say a word. The pastor friend of mine turns to me and says, that will be a first. Now, in that moment, what happened? The ticker started, right? Tick, 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 tick. And I've got a few moments here to determine which wire am I going to cut, because he just cut me. He just put me down. Right? And I looked at him, and this is what I said. I said, thank you. He goes, no, I'm sorry. I go, no, don't. You have nothing to be sorry for. I said, sometimes it's the only way to get through to me is to really be poignant, and sometimes you just got to be sarcastic, and I know you did it in love, and you know you're trying to, you're making a point, but you know what? That's not humility, always having to be the one popping off and talking, and I don't see that in myself. And I asked Sandy, I said, Sandy, do I do a lot of talking? You know, there's dysfunction in us, and we can't see ourselves for who we really are, and we allow other people to point them out, and instead of pushing back, say thank you. That's humility. Recognizing that other people see you differently. And we need to see ourselves for who we really are, not who we want to be or wish we were or made ourselves up to be. Letter B, admitting I don't have all the answers. I don't understand it all. I don't know it all. And this one is tough for me because I really do know it all. You ask me anything and I've got stuff. And if I don't know, I can, you know, Google it really quick. True story, I'm 16 years old. This is long before Google or Bing or Yahoo or any of that stuff. And I bet this guy, because I was absolutely sure, I bet this guy my most prized possession, my 72 Pinto. It's lime green, sweet car. I paid $1,200 for it. Most expensive thing I'd ever bought in my life at that point in my life. And it was my car. And I bet him pink slips over what I was sure I was right. And you know I lost that car? You'd think after 50 years I would learn that I don't know everything. What is it in you, what is it in me that says that I know more than you? That I can't receive anything from you. That you don't have any value to add to the conversation. How many times you've met with an employee or even your own child and you're letting them talk, but you're just going, they don't know nothing. I know everything. They can't add anything to the sphere of knowledge that we need in this situation. Humility says, no, every person. I'm not the smartest person in the room, and every person has something to add to the conversation. And if I will shut up long enough and let them share, boy, it will enhance the decision. It will enhance their value. You will actually show that they have value. You want to talk about cutting the blue wire and bringing peace to a situation? Admit you don't know it all. A lot less bombs would go off. Letter C, admitting my mistakes. Admitting my mistakes. If you've made some dumb mistakes like me, do you own up to them? Or do you make excuses for them? I call it the yeah, but. Right? You know, it's clearly that I ran that red light and smashed into your car, but, yeah, I hit your car, yeah, but listen, here's the deal. The city changed the timing on the yellow lights. They made it shorter. That yellow light should have been yellow longer than it was, so really it wasn't my fault. Any yeah buts here? You know it was your fault, but you got to hear all the rest of it. Humility enables me to say the four hardest words in the English language. I need your help. See, if I'm always right, if I don't make any mistakes, I don't need any help. But if I could admit that, you know what, I'm in this ditch and I don't know how to get out and I've smashed this car and I don't have an answer, I need your help. And then maybe somebody will reach down and say, because you're being humble about it instead of so arrogant and so pig-headed and so, I can't help that. Clean up your own mess. I need your help. Humility allows me to say the three hardest words. I was wrong. I ran the light. Sandy, she just taught this before, my wife, and she talks about how in conversations or in disagreements or in problems that we have, the other person may be 90% wrong, right? 90% of the issue is there. It is there. I'm only 10% wrong with this thing. And so what we tend to do is we do the yeah, but, and we talk about their 90%, all the things that they've done wrong, and your little 10% over here, you kind of push in the back. And Sandy likes to say, hey, you are 100% responsible for your 10%. You're 100% responsible. So stop dealing with their 90% and you deal with your 10% and deal with it 100%. Own up to it. I was wrong. Now, I may not have done any of that stuff. I may have to bring it up. But here's the area where I've got to admit I made a mistake. I need help. I was wrong. Which leads me to the two most hardest words in the English language. Forgive me. Forgive me. Pride says, I don't need forgiveness because I didn't offend you. You just got offended. It's your problem that you got offended. It's not my problem. I need to ask you for forgiveness. You're the one who's got the issues. But humility says, forgive me. Forgive me. Proverbs 13, pride only leads to arguments. Those who take advice are wise. How much of your stubbornness has led to cutting the red wire? Just because you wouldn't humble yourself and go, oh, I don't have all the answers. I don't have to do all the talking. I'm not the smartest person in the room. This person could add something to it. And you know what? I did do some of this. I need to take responsibility for my part. Proverbs 28 says, he who conceals his sin does not prosper. Whoever confesses and renounces it finds mercy. I didn't do anything wrong. Conceal, conceal, conceal. And since I didn't do anything wrong, I don't have anything to renounce. I don't have anything to ask for forgiveness for. And guess what? I don't find mercy. So let me ask you, where are you at? Would you rate yourself on humility? In your little notes there, there's just a 1 to 10. I'm never wrong. That's just true, Pastor. It's just the facts. I'm never wrong. It may be a systemic issue in you. If you're that, if you're a 10, you've probably got some stuff that's just permeated your being. Hey, you know what? Yeah, but. Well, maybe you just need a couple little tweaks. Some dysfunction in you. Whoever confesses and renounces finds mercy, which is number 5 on your notes. Mercy. Mercy. Finally, all of you live in harmony with one another, be sympathetic, love as brothers, compassionate, humble. And then he goes on to this sentence. He says, do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult, but with blessing. Repay insult with blessing, evil with blessing, so that you may inherit a blessing. Wow. Wow, I can imagine the kind of blessing that God has for me. That's called mercy. When you don't repay evil for evil, it's called mercy. Mercy is this kind of a churchy word. Don't use it a lot in public and outside of church. But it goes along with another churchy word called grace. Maybe you've heard of those two words, grace and mercy. You've probably seen this, but they're defined like this. Grace is getting what you don't deserve. Grace is getting what you don't deserve. So you're working on a team and you've got these numbers to hit and everybody on the team hits their numbers, but you don't. The boss comes in, it's Christmas. Hey guys, man, nice job hitting your numbers. Man, I got bonuses for all y'all. And he starts passing out and you know that you didn't hit your numbers and you don't deserve a bonus. And he comes to you last, he says, hey man, I know you tried really hard. You didn't hit your numbers, but I don't deserve that. I know you don't. You're absolutely right. But you know, I appreciate you. Glad you're on the team. And I'm sure you're going to step up and make some things happen. It's called grace. Grace. Wow. Wow, thank you. God looks at my life, and if you saw the videotape of my life, you look at my life and you go, good night, Charlie, you did that? I thought you were a pastor. You did that? You would see things in my life that you'd go, I don't even know how God can stand you. I know he can't. I don't deserve it, but it's called grace. He said, I love you anyway. Grace. The second word is mercy. Mercy is not getting what you do deserve. Not getting what you do deserve. What I really deserve was to be fired. Can my bottom. You know what? Your numbers are so low. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you mercy. And he won't use that word, but he's not repaying me what I deserve. He's given me mercy. Somebody insults you, and it is the law of the jungle. An eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You insult me, I'm going to insult you back. And if I don't do it out loud, I'm going to do it in my head. And I'm going to say all those things about you and my drive back, you know, from... And then I'm going to unload on my husband or my wife. And oh, I totally miss this. It's going to come out somewhere. Mercy says, hey, repay an insult with blessing. Don't repay evil for evil. That is so different than everything we've been taught. I don't know if this totally applies, but it's a cute story. My little cousin and I, his mom just passed, my Aunt Loretta, and I'm going to go down to the funeral down in Eugene next week. And she's the one who took us in when my brother and I, when my mom left for the service and we didn't have any place to live and I could go live with my aunt and uncle, my Uncle John and Aunt Loretta. And the only caveat was we had to go to church. So my Aunt Loretta said, you can come live with us, but you have to go to church. So I start going to church. So I'm going to this church, and my cousin, who's older than me, but he was shorter than I am, so he was getting picked on by somebody at school. And I said, hey, knock that off. The guy goes, yeah, what are you going to do about it? Red wire. That's all it took. I grew up in a home, and this is what we did. And so I muscled up, and we went at it. And I usually didn't end up like this, but this is one of those times where I was on the bottom. He had his knees on me like this, and his fist was raised, and I could just start to feel it coming. I was trying to brace for it. And I don't know where this came from, but I just started going to church. So, you know, these kind of stuff was starting to flutter around in my head. And I looked up at this guy, and I kid you not, I said, Jesus loves you. With his fist. And the guy got confused, and he kind of shoves me and walks away. And I went, whoa, the Bible's right. I don't think I went, whoa, the Bible's right then. I wasn't putting it all together. But the Bible says a kind answer turns away wrath. Wow. When you repay insult with insult, man, you know exactly what you're going to get. When you try it God's way and say, hey, I'm going to cut the blue wire. And this cantankerous employee, this person in my family, I got to spend 4 hours with at the family party. Hey, I'm going to replay with blessing. They're going to say something cutting. They're going to say something dang. They're going to ding me. They're going to try to, I'm going to repay it with blessing. I like what this version of 1 Peter says. Don't be hateful and insult people just because they are hateful and insult you. You know that in-law? Just always digging. Instead, check this out. Treat everyone with kindness. Circle that word kindness if it's there in your notes. For you are God's chosen. What does that mean? You're a Christian. Remember, Christian doesn't mean I wear a badge that says I'm a Christian and carry a big Bible. It means I am Christ-like. People look at you and they go, wow, I like your Christianity. I don't like their Christianity because they just carry a big Bible and thump everybody with it. But you are kind. You are kind. You are God's chosen and He will bless you. I looked up that word kindness and I put together some words that came up. Affectionate, warm, gentle, tender, concerned, caring, helpful, thoughtful, unselfish, altruistic, compassionate, sympathetic, understanding, big-hearted, benevolent, friendly, neighborly, hospitable, amiable, courteous, public-spiritedness. I have no idea what that means. Generous, magnanimous, indulgent, patient, tolerant, charitable, gracious, lenient, humane, merciful, decent, bounteous. And I looked at that list and I said, okay, I'm going to circle all the words that relate to me. That if people looked at me and they said, hey, if we describe Charlie, we're going to use these words. And I started going through it. And you know which one I came up with? Public spiritedness. Because I don't know what it means. I must be. When people look at you, they go, oh, she's compassionate. Wow, they're tender. Wow, they're humane. You know, I know this is going to be challenging, but they're lenient. They're just not going to bust me a new one. You know, I'm so appreciative I can talk to this person because they're patient when we have the conversation. It's going to be a difficult conversation. They're patient. They're caring. They're helpful. How many of these words would fit you? Christ-like. You know, it's easy to say, don't repay evil for evil. It's hard to do. Man, it just sets that timer off to almost like 1 second and you just want to go. Think about it in your marriage when, you know, why is it that your spouse is the one who can just light your fuse? And before you stop, it's already out of your mouth. And the dinner is ruined and the night is tanked. How do you pay back with a blessing? Let me tell you the easiest way to do it. Your spouse says something to you, an employee says something to you, your boss, somebody says something to you. The first thing you do to repay with a blessing is to actually pray for them. You may want to write that down. I will pray for them. What does that do? It forces you in that moment to stop before you cut the wire because you're ready to go. And you go, okay, I'm going to pray for them. That in itself gives you a moment to pause and say, hey, well, what's the next thing out of my mouth? Consider what you're going to do. You know, even if you pray one of David's prayers, a number of weeks ago we talked about David's imprecatory prayers. Maybe you don't remember. In Psalm 3, we went through this and it says, arise, Lord. And this is David praying. Deliver me, my God, from this person in my life. In fact, strike my enemy and bust him in the jaw and break their teeth. That's his prayer. So if you, God, this person, bust him in the mouth, all you're doing is just praying the Bible. Just praying God's word. It's absolutely legit. Here's the thing. He's saying, look, God, you are the judge of all the earth, not me. You bust him in the mouth, but not me. You send him an insult, but not me. You are bringing God into your equation and saying, God, you take care of this because right now I'm going to say something that I shouldn't say. And when you bring their name in the same breath as you bring in God, you're bringing blessing on them. Have you seen the new Mr. Rogers movie? You seen that scene where he gets on the side of his bed and he prays for those people? He's praying blessing. He's repaying blessing for insult. Here's the deal. When you're deeply hurt, you have a choice. You have a choice. Colossians 3:13 says, be gentle, ready to forgive. Never hold grudges. The Lord forgave you, so you must forgive others. That's the last party they're being invited to. you know what, that we're not inviting them over again. I'm done with that person. That's it. I'm done. What have you done? You've allowed the systemic, you've allowed that thing to bust out of its shell, become a root of bitterness. The Bible calls it, that starts eating away at your whole being. And some people carry that bitterness their whole life, and you bring up that person's name and they're still, it eats them. And you may be talking about something completely different, but that thing begins to affect them, and they begin to manifest over here when the issue was way back here, when they allowed that root of bitterness to grow up. You hold a grudge and it will kill you. Let me give you three things really quick, then we're going to close. I'll never have to forgive others more than God has forgiven me. I'll never have to forgive others more than God has forgiven me. Number two, every relationship requires major doses of forgiveness. Why? Because we're either dysfunctional or we're systemic. We're all sinners. Your marriage requires major doses of forgiveness because you married a sinner. You married a dysfunctional person, they weren't whole. Some of you married somebody who was systemic and you're dealing with that, and it's been a challenge for you, but it requires a lot of forgiveness. Number three, a Christian being Christ-like, not carrying a Bible and just wearing a nice suit, but being Christ-like, we must be willing to forgive people even before they ask. Why? Because when Jesus was on the cross and he said, Father, forgive them, he was speaking about you long before you ever even turned to him and said, I need forgiveness. And long before that person ever turns to you and says, I'm sorry, I blew it, I was wrong. You've already released it in your heart and you've given it to God and said, I forgive. Mercy and grace. How are you doing on the mercy? You might want to rate yourself there. And number six, manage my mouth. Manage my mouth. Really quickly, whoever would love life, that's me. Desire happy days. Yes. I want the last 30 years of my marriage to be happy. I want my grandkids to come visit me. Oh, well, I've got to manage my mouth, keep my tongue from evil and deceitful speech. Let me just address that, and then we'll pray. And actually, I'm going to let the band sing. Deceitful speech. That's called pride, because what are we doing? We're lying to people. We're lying to people. You were trying to make ourselves better than who we are. We tell these little lies and we say things that we think that people want to hear, but we know that we're not going to be able to keep it. You want to know what destroys a relationship faster than anything? Dishonesty. Little white lies. Hey, I'll be home at 5. 5:45 comes rolling around. Oh, man, it was traffic. Yeah, but oh, we had this. And you get one. You might get two. But if it becomes a pattern in your life and you're always saying things because, you know, you just don't want to, you know, you know what causes affairs? This right here. People who don't manage their mouth. They tell little lies. Man, he never follows through. Never does what he says he's going to do. Man. And you go to the office Christmas party, and he's over there by the cupcake table, and he's getting another drink, and here's this sweet little thing that started working there about 8 months ago, and they're kind of smiling, and you go, is that why he's not coming home? Is that why he never? And that seed is there and it begins to percolate. And I'll get the phone call inevitably and they'll say, Pastor, my husband, my wife, she had an affair. And man, I can't believe it. They'll always talk about how it just started. And I go, no, this didn't start last night. This didn't start last week. This started back with the first white lie. And that began to erode your relationship. And what happened is because you weren't trusting him or you weren't trusting her, this thing began to pull apart. And it didn't take a sweet little thing. It just took somebody else to show a little bit of attention. And them going, oh, this feels good. All because I cut the wrong wire. And I've been cutting the wrong wire and keep cutting the wrong wire and keep cutting the wrong wire. A lot of times we just lie to ourselves. I don't have a problem. She's the problem. I don't need Jesus. I'm smart. I can get through this world without God. And we lie to ourselves. We say, my sin is not that big of a deal. I mean, you know, come on, let's be comparative here. is systemic. For some of you here this morning, you just need a couple little tweaks, but here's what's really cool. God can be your rock, can be your fortress, can be your shield. And if you'll allow your heart to open up, man, just even the tiniest bit, the Bible says just the tiniest amount of faith, that he will meet you there. Take one step toward him and he'll take 1,000 towards you. It's called grace and mercy. As the Aaron sings this song, I want you to maybe open your heart that little bit. Maybe it's just a small little problem. The other person's got a big problem, but you're going to bring your small little issue to Jesus this morning.